The snow line is that place where at the end of the summer, when you still have snow left on the mountain that didn't melt, below that point, everything is melted off the mountain that you see here. But above that point, you have the potential of accumulating snow each year, and therefore it will continue to pile up. As it piles up, the snowflakes begin to pack together to squeeze out the air spaces. You begin to melt and refreeze. You get granular ice with little pores left between the ice granules. Eventually, you pack it together and you get solid ice. When you get 200 feet of ice, you've got enough for the ice to actually flow plastically. So it begins to flow downhill. About 50 years ago, the snow line down at the equator was around 12,000 feet. Here in Washington, it may have been down to 5,000 feet. In northern Canada, Alaska, it would be down to sea level. My guess is with global warming, there's very few places where we're accumulating snow now, and all the glaciers, for the most part, are beginning to melt. Okay, next. Okay, we're going to do a little background here before we move on to illustrations. We're going to talk about mountain glaciation. Up in here where it is the zone of accumulation where snow falls. If a stream erodes a valley, the water is flowing in a V-shaped valley. The water only acts where the water is flowing down in the bottom of the valley. Maybe it might get 50 feet deep or something like that, and it rolls sand and gravel and boulders there and erodes on the valley floor. The walls of the valley, you get landslide and material that falls down in where the stream is, and then the stream washes it out. The harder the rock, the steeper the V. The softer the rock, the wider the V. Okay? Where you have a glacial valley, you have to picture the valley filled with ice several thousand feet thick, and therefore the ice not only grinds on the valley floor, it also grinds on the walls, and therefore you get a U-shaped valley. All right, you with me? All right, up here is where the snow falls. The ice freezes, it gets over 200 feet thick. The ice freezes around the jagged rocks and boulders, or rocks that are up there, not necessarily boulders, but it freezes around the cracks, and then when the ice begins to flow downhill, it grabs a hold of that rock and takes it with it. Okay? It also grinds on the valley floor right here, plucking out that rock, and so it loads the bottom of the glacier with ice at that point, and it acts like sandpaper. And it grinds on the floor, grinding off the rock to make a glacial flour. And I will show you some glacial flour where it's ground down to a powder. And when the stream comes into a valley, it generally has a smooth profile with the tributary streams coming in at the same level. I'll show you that glacial valleys tend to be stair-stepped. And if there's a hard resistant rock, it tends to go over the top of it, down into softer rock, grind that out, hit a more resistant rock, go over that and down. So glacial valleys are characteristically stair-stepped. So we're going to grind out this rock. As the ice pulls away from the mountain, it leaves an area that we call a bergschrund, which means mountain crack. That opens up a crack there that might be 200 feet deep. The mountain climbers have to be aware of this, because if there's a snow bridge over the top of that, they could break through that and fall 200 feet. At any rate, when that pulls away fair, the winter snowfall fills that crack back up with snow and ice. That refreezes on the rocks, the jagged material there, and when that pulls forward, then it plucks that rock out. So a glacier works headward into the mountain by plucking out the rock, leaving a crack, filling that up, refreezing, plucking that rock out. And so as a consequence, the upper part of the valley here develops a bowl-shaped basin that we call a cirque. Okay, this is the zone of wastage down here where you get, at this point, the snow and ice melts, but the ice moving forward here gets way down below the snow line. At some point, it reaches equilibrium with the climate, and as fast as it gets to that point, it melts. And you have to realize that the rock is loaded in the bottom of the glacier, but the glacier tends to ride up on itself, slide up and carry rock up into the interior of the ice, And then the material landing on top of it tends to load rock there piggyback. So by the time you get down here at the foot of the glacier, there might be as much as 80% rock and 20% ice. So it really gets loaded. All right, but now this acts like a conveyor belt. When it gets down there and melts, it just dumps all this rock up, down at that point. And it's a jumbled mixture. It isn't sorted into layers. A stream will sort sediment into layers, it will stratify it, and it will sort it to grain size. A glacier does no sorting, it just dumps it. All right, if the glacier coming down here, the climate warms up so that the ice retreats, I do not mean that the ice backs uphill. A glacier is always moving downhill, but it may melt faster than it moves forward. Okay? Some glaciers move at the rate maybe 12 feet in a year. Others move at the rate of 150 feet in a year. Okay? And those that move that fast we call galloping glaciers. All right. So as the ice retreats, it's still dumping off material and will form ground moraine as it dumps it off, as it backs up, still like a conveyor belt. It may reach equilibrium for the climate here, and it'll stay there for a period of time. So it will deposit what we call a recessional moraine. And then it may back up a little further, stay there a while, deposit another recessional moraine, okay? All right, with this as a background, now we're ready to move forward. Okay, this is a cirque wall here. There's the bergschrund right along there. You see where it's beginning to pull away from the mountain? These mountain climbers have got to be aware of that. They want to be careful going over there, roped up so that if they fall down, they can get pulled back out. Next. Okay, this is Martin Ridge. That's Copper Peak. 6,000 feet below there is Holden Village. I know because I was there. Okay? Anyway, this is what you've got to picture this valley here. This is what it looked like back in the Ice Age, probably 250,000 years ago for this one. Next. All right, here's a main glacier coming out of an ice field up here, down at this point. Here's a tributary glacier coming in here. The rock falling on this part forms a lateral moraine along here. It joins up from two sides and forms a medial moraine coming right down along here. Okay, next. As I said, glaciers coming down the valley, well, a stream coming down here will turn and twist and go around all the obstacles, but a glacier being hard and resistant can't turn corners very well, so it will straighten out the valley. It may meet a resistant rock, be forced to turn, but notice how straight that is. Next. All right, this is what I call a baby cirque. What you've got to picture now is that snow and ice in here and pulled away from here and started plucking this rock out, but it didn't get very far before the climate warmed up, and that's as far as it got. Next. This is a mature cirque. It's worked headward into the mountain, making a very steep head wall there. If glaciers came in from the other side making a head wall, you may have a knife edge ridge right along here between the two valleys, okay? It tends to oversteepen the basin, and you'll get lakes dammed up behind a resistant rock right here, so we call these tarns. Next. All right, my Jeep is sitting, I think, right there. I'm up on the head wall of a cirque over in this direction. There's another cirque on the other side. Two cirques meeting back to back, and they pluck out the rock between them. When they do that, it plucks out all of this material right here, and we have a pass through the mountains, okay? Two glaciers meeting back to back, plucking the rock out, all right? You can see a knife edge ridge around here that turns and twists. On the other side of that is a large cirque basin. Next. All right, this is Logan Pass in Glacier National Park, and there's the garden wall, they call it, the knife edge ridge here. This wall was stripped away, and now we have a pass through the mountains where sometimes highways and railroads go through. Okay, next. All right, if you have glaciers on three or four sides of an isolated mountain, they will work headward up against the cirque wall, and you'll get a horn sticking up. You ever have seen this one before? Matterhorn, all right. So this is what's happened in this area. Next. All right, this is just to illustrate again how streams turn and twist and go around. Tributary streams coming into the main valley join at the same point, but the glacier, with its greater mass of ice here, will carve much deeper than any tributary, so you'll have hanging valleys over at the side, and you'll have a waterfall spilling down from there. In streams, you don't have a waterfall coming down because they come in at the same level. Copper Basin up here is a hanging valley, okay? You got a waterfall coming down. Next. All right, this is in Switzerland, I think, a pass going over into Italy. I've forgotten just where this is, but notice how straight this valley is. You can see the U shape to this point, and then a sudden change in slope. That was eroded by a stream to this point. The glacier took over there and carved down there. Okay, next. All right, this is a glacial U valley. I'm not in the best place to show you the U shape. I just have to assure you that it is. The glacier melted away and then the stream took over, and now it's carving this very narrow valley right down through very hard rock. I can tell you that it's hard because it's a narrow valley, okay? And I'll show you the next picture right down below this, next. And there's the stream right there that's cutting this narrow joint right there. It'll continue to carve straight on down until it reaches a joint, and some of the rock will break loose and plug that up, and then it has to erode it out. But this is the difference between stream erosion and glacial erosion. Next. All right, this is in the Sierras. You can see where the glacial flour being dragged along the across the rock has polished the rock, so you get very polished rock, and some of this polished rock is weathering, breaking loose. There is a boulder that got carried piggyback, and then when the ice melted, it got lowered down onto that surface. In continental glaciation, sometimes you get blocks of granite the sizes of buses shoved from Canada down into Illinois and Iowa, and then dropped in the middle of what is now some farmer's field. And there's no granite for miles around. Well, it got carried piggyback and then dropped at this point. Next. All right. If I count the number of medial moraines here, I can tell you how many tributary valleys there are up valley. That is, here's the lateral moraine coming in here and one coming there. They join to form a medial moraine. Okay? So, yes?
I'm sorry. Could you just explain what the moraine is? I missed the
definition. All right. A moraine is just where rock and debris has been dumped by the glacier, wherever it is, or it could be material that's carried piggyback along the side, and it's just a pile of rock.
Okay.
Right here, you can see where the medial moraines have got contorted. That's probably where the ice suddenly surged forward as a galloping glacier and contorted it. Mixed. Okay, this is in Sweden. You can see the polished rock here where the ice has moved over here and grinding off the rock. This is what we call glacial till. It's the debris that got deposited by the ice. Probably this is ground moraine that left behind on top of the rock there. And it's just a mixture of boulders, pebbles, clay, whatever. Next. This is in the Sahara Desert in Africa. I don't know of any other erosional feature that can carve grooves and scratches and polish the rock other than glaciers. What does this tell us? If the Sahara Desert, was there once ice here all the way from the South Pole to this point? And I don't think so. What's happened is that Africa used to be down at the South Pole. It's drifted to its present position by continental plate tectonics, and now we see it here. That particular ice age, you can find where Africa, South America, India was joined together, and you can see the continental glaciation from when it was at that time. Okay? Huge moraines, 1,500 feet thick, got deposited by that ice. Next. Okay, this is the eastern side of the Sierra Nevada in a wintertime scene. You can see the U-shaped valley here. You can see our lateral moraine along the side here. You can see where the terminal moraine is down here, and here's a recessional moraine behind it. There probably was a lake there from water draining off the melt, and the lake overflowed, and it's now cut a channel down through the moraines at that point. But now you can recognize that there used to be ice here. Next. All right, this is a glacier in Alaska. I count 5 medial moraines over here. There's another one here. The ripple marks that you see there are called ogives. They might possibly represent annual rings. That is, in the wintertime, when you get greater snow, it surges forward and produces a crest. As the season progresses, you get less ice flowage and you have a trough. So these are annual, pushing forward the ice. Okay.
Does the curve indicate the different rates of flow between the center and the sides?
The center of the ice tends to move faster than the edges. There's a friction along there. Okay, next. And this is a little closer down to the ice. These are the five moraines that you saw there. The white is last winter's snowfall on top. The gray here is the ice of the glacier itself. Next. Okay, you can really see the amount of material that's being eroded out of here. All of this has been eroded out. You can count the number of medial moraines and tributaries coming in. Picture in your mind's eye all of this rock debris carried down valley and then like a conveyor belt and dumped. You'll get a huge mound down there, like mountains, 1,500 feet high in some places. Okay, next. This is the Athabasca Glacier in Canada. They've kept track of the glacier, I think, back until the late 1800s. And this has been slowly retreating with time. I think this ice mass has now retreated back to about there. So at any rate, here's the lateral moraine when this ice was much thicker at one time. And I'm going to take you down to look at this particular lateral moraine. Next. And you can see that it's a jumbled pile of rock and boulders and clay and sand. And next. And I'll get a side view of it here. It's just a jumbled mixture. If the stream had deposited, it would have washed out the fine stuff and stratified it into layers. Next. That material is called glacial till, T-I-L-L. Sometimes you'll find boulders in the till that are flattened on one side and they'll have parallel grooves on it. That particular boulder was probably frozen in the bottom of the ice and then got dragged along the bed of the valley floor and then ground off smooth, okay? The other sides are still round. Next. All right, here is a retreating glacier. I think this picture was taken in 1963. You can see the recessional moraines that are formed as this thing progressively retreats. I suspect this glacier is way back up in here. And as the ice melts, you'll get streams draining through here, washing out deposits, so you have an outwash apron of sediments deposited by the streams. Next. So, just as somebody said, if I were to drive a series of stakes across the mountain and come back 2 months later, we'll find all of these stakes have shifted their position so that the differential flow of the ice. The upper part of the ice is not plastic, it's brittle, and it gets stretched and stressed, and so you develop crevasses because of that, because they tend to break because of that stress. Okay, next. All right, this is in the Antarctic. Here is a crevasse that's beginning to open up at this point. These particular explorers were interested in that crevasse, and using some picks and whatever, they began to cut down into it. Next. And you see they're lowering themselves down on a rope ladder, going down into that crevasse. Next. And here you can get an idea of what they're doing. And that crevasse could be almost 200 feet thick. Okay. Beyond that point, there's enough plasticity that it flows. Next. Glacial ice is commonly quite blue. And this is my wife in this is in Switzerland, I think near Grindelwald. The local natives there used a chainsaw and carved a tunnel back in here so that tourists could go back in there. We were a couple of those tourists. And you can see how blue the ice is. The blueness is due to a slightly different change in crystal structure of the ice and probably to minute particles of dust in there that help to scatter the light. At any rate, the reds, greens, yellows, and whatever gets absorbed and blue light is reflected out in, so it becomes blue. Next. Okay, now we're going to switch to the continental ice. There have been at least four times in the last 2 million years in which the ice accumulated in Canada. And if I were to take a ball of clay the size of an orange and make a perfect spherical shape and put it on a tabletop, the clay particles might have enough strength for each other to retain that spherical shape. If I make it the size of a basketball, it still might be able to retain that shape. If I make it maybe 8 feet in diameter, at some point the pull of gravity down on that ball of clay is going to exceed the strength of the clay particles one for another, and that ball of clay will just begin to flatten out across the table. Okay? What's happened here is that the ice in Canada has gotten perhaps as much as 20,000 feet thick. In order to do this, you have to take a lot of water out of the ocean, and the ocean levels back in those times were lowered as much as 600 feet worldwide in order to get enough water out to make the ice. Okay? For some reason, there was more ice here and here than around this region, and the ice came down through here on both sides and left an area here in Wisconsin that we call the driftless area. The ice never covered that. In that particular region, it's like going from night to day. There are 1,500-foot canyons, stream eroded in there. Those same stream canyons actually continue over here in Iowa and Illinois, but the glaciers have come down and filled the valleys up with glacial debris and flattened them out. Okay. So, but those valleys are excellent water sources. They've mapped where they are, and they drill down to the stream deposits down there where the water is stored, and they can pump it out in the wells. Okay. The reason it's called driftless area is that drift is a name that geologists give to any ice deposits. That would be wind deposited, stream deposited, ice deposited, whatever it is, it's collectively called drift. They don't want to map it, which it is, they just call it drift. Well, this is a driftless area. There's no drift there, okay? There was enough ice that came down across here to actually reach almost the southern tip of Illinois in one of those ice ages. We know from that there is at least four ice ages, one on top of each other, each having a glacial till that's present. The ice came over the top of what some of the creationists claim are layers of deposits that were deposited during Noah's flood. Okay, so this has to be after Noah's flood, according to these people. And if you've got four ice ages, to accumulate enough ice to make that, you must have tremendous winter climates. I don't know how anybody would survive how cold these are. And then in between of this, you have to have a climate that's so hot it must have been blowtorch in nature. You would have cooked these people if you do this in 7,000 years. All right, are you with me? All right, next. All right, but geologists have mapped this area, and here is an advance of ice. There's a terminal moraine. You can see in green here. You can see recessional moraines behind there. The yellow represent stream channels coming through that are doing this. The ice came down along here, and it came down Lake Michigan. Where Lake Michigan sits, there is a shale layer there that's very soft, so it's easily ground out. That's why Lake Michigan is where it is. The white area here is the driftless area. The glacial moraines there dammed up this drainage here, so you can see an ancient lake there in blue. So you can see the geologists pretty much know what's going on. Next. Between Alaska and Siberia over here is a narrow inlet right at this point. One possible cause of the ice age is that if this area were uplifted so that this becomes a landmass across here, then the warmer ocean waters here couldn't get back in here to warm this area, and once you cut it off, then this acts as a refrigerator, and therefore the climate could cool it down. If the landmass sinks down so the water can get back in there, then we can start an interglacial age. Next, this is just one possibility. All right, here's the top of the ice. Where the water begins to melt, it turns and twists and goes around the obstacles, wherever it is, just like any other stream. Next. And that stream will pick up boulders, pebbles, and carry it along. And if it comes to a crevasse or a hole in the ice next, it will dump those boulders right down into a hole there. It will wash out the fine stuff, and sometimes the boulders gets wedged in there, and so the whole cavity here gets filled up with boulders. Okay, next. And here is an example where rock and debris is dumped down into a hole and piled up a rock debris there. Sometimes the stream melts its way through the ice and it forms a tunnel through the ice. In the bottom of the tunnel will be stratified sands and gravels. If the ice becomes stagnant, that stream tunnel will then be lowered down on top of the ground moraine. And these stream tunnels that are lowered down are called eskers, and those that get deposited as an isolated mound are called kames. Okay, now let's look at some of these. Here is a kame sitting out in the middle of Wisconsin somewhere, just an isolated mound of sand and gravel. Okay, next. And if we make a road cut through it, we can see that all the fine stuff has been washed out, and we just have boulders and pebbles piled up. Next. So this is an ice mass right there. There's the bedrock. You can see the grooves and scratches that have been ground there as the ice has been dragging boulders underneath it. The ice used to sit about right here. There's where the ice emerged from a tunnel and deposited a delta or an outwash apron right here. But now you can trace the position of that stream along an esker all the way back to this point. Next. This is an esker going across farmers' fields. It's just a mound of pebbles and turning and twist where that tunnel used to be. Next. And if we make a road cut through it, you can see that it had stratified boulders in here. Since the ice has been removed, then you get slumpage here, but that's what that esker looks like. Next. All right, this is glacial flour. Ground up rock gets washed out into the streams and carried as a white mixture here. I on occasion have been in some places where I've run out of my drinking water in the canteen, and I've been so thirsty that I have taken a drink of this just to get some water. It's not the best milkshake that I've had, I'll tell you. It's very gritty. I just know it isn't going to hurt my system, but I don't recommend it. Okay, but this material is deposited in flats of mud. Next. And in wintertime and then during continental glaciation, that whole surface was exposed to sun. The sun would pick up and wash out all the glacial flour. You'd have rivers coming away from this thing, maybe a mile or 2 miles wide, with floodplains that deposited all the mud across there. In the wintertime, when there was no melting, this area would dry out and the winter winds would pick up that clay as glacial flour and blow it as dust storms. Okay? And you had huge dust storms when this was present. Next. And in some places in Illinois, that dust was piled up maybe 15, 20, 40 feet thick. There were tall grasses growing at that time. The dust would catch in the grass, settle down into where the grass was growing. The grass would have vertical roots. And as the grass continued to grow, as that piled up, the roots would develop a vertical structure. When I was back in Illinois, the engineers used to make road cuts through this material, and they were taught to make a 45-degree cut for a slope to the road. And what would happen would be the dust would erode back to a vertical shape where it was stable, and then there would be no more erosion. They learned their lesson, and when they go through this kind of stuff, they just make a vertical cut to begin with and save the amount of erosion. Next. Okay, I need to tell you that everything that you see at this place is underlain by ice. The rock and debris that's been carried here, you've actually got trees and shrubs growing in that rock and debris. Okay, but it's beginning to melt, and in some places you don't have as much cover, and so you develop lakes in here, and this material here will pile up. And when all of this melts down, you may have 25 miles across in which you have kettles and cames all mixed together. And in Wisconsin, you have a kettle came park, don't you, somewhere there?
Kettle Moraine.
Okay. Well, this is how it got started.
Where is this?
I don't remember. I can look on my slide, but I don't remember. Yes. I get some of my pictures from other people. And here's part of that glacier here. You can see large boulders, material that are being carried piggyback. This is ice here that's melting. Next. Okay, this is kettle cane topography. The ice is gone. Here are kettles with lakes in them. And here's the mounds of material. And this area may stretch for 25 miles. And then behind this, you will have ground moraine. It'll be flat. And then you'll come to another recessional moraine somewhere. Okay, next. All right, this is a wintertime scene, and you still have some snow and ice, but it's melting, and you can see the lakes underneath it, but you can see the very hummocky kettle cane topography. Next. All right, these are what you have to picture now is the ice advancing down to this point, reaching equilibrium there, depositing a moraine here, a recessional moraine, retreating for a ways, and then re-advancing to that point, retreating for a ways, advancing to this point, retreating there, advancing there. So you get a series of recessional moraines. Okay, next. All right, behind some of these moraines, you often get huge lakes dammed up behind them. They're not very deep because the moraine is only 50 feet high maybe, or 100 feet high, but all of that water at one time was underlain. Was part of a lake dammed up behind a moraine. It's shallow. In the summertime, when it's warm, the lake gets algae in it, so you have green algae growing. In the summertime, you get melt that washes in glacial flour. The glacial flour settles out in the lake to make a layer of white quartz and feldspar, so you have a very thin layer of quartz and feldspar deposited there. In the wintertime, the lake refreezes over the top, it kills the algae. The algae settles out and becomes a carbonaceous black layer. Next summer, the ice melts off. You get more water coming in and more sand and silt coming in. You get another white layer. More algae grow, gets killed and settles out another black layer. You get the picture? So that you get a series of annual rings. Next. And they're called varves. And you can see the varves here, the dark layer, the white layer. And in some places where you can erode down through these places, you can count as many as 250,000 varves. So now we know that this lake had to be here at least 250,000 years. Okay? This sort of beats the 7,000 year age of the creationists. Okay, next. This is at Two Creeks, Wisconsin. You can see logs here. They're actually eroded out from underneath the material here. That's another log, but it's underneath the glacial till that you see there. What you have to picture is that the ice was retreating, and as it retreated, a forest was growing at the margin of it with very large mature Douglas fir logs. Then for some reason, the ice readvanced, went over the top of the forest, and buried some of those trees. Okay. They have done carbon-14 dating on these trees, and they are 10,000 years in age. I've gotten samples of some of the cones that are in here and some of the wood, and it's carbonized a little bit, but it still looks like wood. Okay. So again, this, if we believe carbon-14 dating, this is still older than 7,000 years, which is the creationist one. Okay, next. All right. Glaciers go over rocks of different hardness, and they tend to shape them into teardrop-shaped mounds, which we call drumlins. In some parts of North America and Canada, you can find fields of 500 drumlins all lined up in the same direction. And we say, ah, the ice went that way. And in some places, you'll find they curve, and you know the ice turned its direction at that point. Okay, next. All right, here is a stream channel in which there's no water now flowing. There's no source of water for it. The black here are scratches on my film, but at any rate, there is an old stream channel of one of the streams that was draining away from the ice, but there's nothing to feed it right now. Next. Now we're going to switch over here to Washington, where we are. The glacial ice came down at this point and went over a tributary of the Columbia River. And when it went over that part, stream drainage coming in there got dammed up behind this block of ice. The water filled up the valleys to the brim top, and then the water spilled out across the brim top and went across the landscape. Okay? And what happened is what I will show you next. What happened is it cut channels through the tops of the areas in here and spilled over some of these places to form huge waterfalls. When the ice finally melted back across here so that you could open up the Columbia River tributary here, that lake suddenly went out as a huge flood of water, and it went out with such speed that it just scoured the landscape with a huge flood. Okay, next. This is the terminal moraine of that ice coming down here. You can see the hummocky terrain. Beyond that point, you can see the outwash area here. This is where the farmers are planting their field, but so many boulders and material in here, they can't grow any crops at that point. Next. Here are some of the channels that are coming across the landscape. When that valley filled up with water to form a huge lake and the water flowed across the landscape. Next. This is when the lake finally burst through after the ice finally melted to open up the channel there, and the water went out with such a flood it just scoured the area here. This is the channeled scab lands, and you can find ripple marks in the sand in which the crest between the ripple marks are 300 feet across. That water went out with a huge rush and force. Okay. All right, here are where the waterfalls spilled over basalt lava flows right here, hardened ones, of course, and it spilled over here to form a plunge pool at this area. This is what happens at Niagara Falls. The water goes over a resistant limestone layer. Underneath it is a softer shale, and the water spills over, undercuts the shale, eventually blocks the limestone fall down, and so Niagara Falls is working headward into the landscape just like streams do, just like glaciers do. Okay? This lake right here that you see used to be a plunge pool for when that stream valley was at this point. So this valley is working headward into the landscape. Okay, next. All right, this is somewhere in Alaska, I think. Here's where a glacier has come down to the ocean, and this is where icebergs are created. It's where the ice comes out to the ocean. The ice will continue to grind on the ocean floor until 9/10 of the ice mass is below the surface, and then it floats. So we find moraines out in the ocean floor, sometimes 25, 30 miles off the coast, where the ice melts and dumps its material. Okay? All right, next. So here's where a glacier is coming down. You can see blocks of ice will break loose here to form icebergs. If that's 200 feet high, I know that there is 1,800 feet of ice below that surface. Okay, so this makes the icebergs, and this is what floats. Always 9/10 is below, 1/10 is above. Next. Now this is a U-shaped valley. I think it's in either Norway or New Zealand. You can see the U-shape of the valley. Here is a hanging valley with a waterfall spilling over here. As you go further down valley from here, next. Eventually the water floods back up these valleys once the glacier has melted. These would be excellent places for battleships to come in because they're so deep, but there's no place to land on the side because the walls are so steep. Okay, next. And here's another one. I think this one is in New Zealand. There's a waterfall coming down at that point. Next. Okay, now we're coming home to our area. There's Lake Chelan. Okay, this is the main glacier coming down the valley. It reached finally where the city of Chelan is. Its huge mass ground the valley so deep that I think at one point it's 450 feet below sea level. Okay, it's really grounded out. Where the city of Chelan is where all of that rock debris in the bottom of it, loaded in the middle, carried piggyback, gets dumped like a conveyor belt, it piles up such a huge mound of material at the terminal moraine that when the ice melted, you have this lake dammed up behind it. Okay, next. If you go down the boat and look down near Lake Chelan, or look the city of Chelan and the dock there, you will see stratified layers along the side here. Those are river terraces. At one time, the ice was at those levels, and streams draining along the edge of the ice deposited their sand and gravel there. And as the ice melted, those sand and gravel deposits got left there as stratified layers. So you can see the terraces that occur there. Next. Okay, this is in a road cut going up to where the mine tailings are, up for the mine portal. When I was here, it was pretty well exposed, and you can see this lateral moraine along here with boulders, pebbles, as part of glacial till. The alders are starting to grow over this, and it's not so well exposed now. Next. And we're looking up valley now toward Heart Lake Falls. Right there, there's a resistant basaltic dike that cuts across there that's harder, and behind it is Heart Lake. And then you can see the U-shape of the valley here where the glacier once came down. Okay? If you walk up to Heart Lake Falls, occasionally you'll go up and down over some rough terrain. Those are recessional moraines that you're going over. Next. And we're up at just near Crown Point Falls, looking down valley. You can see the U-shape. There's where the resistant dike is. It's more resistant to erosion. There's Heart Lake at this point. Okay, next. And now we're up on Martin Ridge, looking down at Holden Lake. This is a stair step up to, this is Bonanza Peak right here. The gray there is the last stage remnant of the glacial ice that once filled this valley. The white is last winter's snowfall. And if this were to melt out, you would have melt away. You would end up with a bowl-shaped basin up there to form a cirque. Okay? And occasionally, the ice moves forward enough so that ice blocks fall over this cliff down into Holden Lake. Okay, next. This is Holden Lake, looking up toward where the glacier is above that point. Next. All right, we are at Heart Lake, looking up toward Crown Point Falls, a step up above to a resistant rock. We go around this, and right behind it in this area in here is where Lyman Lake is. Okay. Next. And now we're up at Cloudy Pass, looking down at Lyman Lake. When the winter snow melts off, you'll expose two more lakes up here at different levels. And this is a very large, complex cirque basin up here where the ice once was at this higher elevation. Next. And that's it. Somebody can turn the lights on. And I'll answer any questions or comments that you might have. Yes?
Copper Basin.
Yes.
Have you studied the glacier, or have there been any contemporary studies of the glaciers in that basin?
I'm not sure that there's any remnant of glacier up there.
Okay.
I think it's just winter snowfall and whatever.
I'm curious, since that's where we get our water from,
yes,
how long we have before we run out of water.
Oh, I think we'll get enough winter snowfall that this is what supplies us. Eventually, there's a possibility that we'll put a hydroelectric plant on 10 Mile Falls, which will have a larger basin to give us more energy. Anybody else? Yes?
If I'm hearing right, these glaciers have been receding for thousands and thousands of years.
Yes.
And yet the alarms are saying that this is a sign of global warming.
All right.
And I guess the question, though, is I don't doubt that global warming is happening, but how much of that's just the natural evolution of what's
okay.
What goes through?
There's plenty of evidence that through geologic time we've had periods of warming. Mm-hmm. Hence, we've had these four different ice ages. But those last over 250,000 years. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing now is an accelerated warming.
Okay.
And it's because of humans who put CO2 and whatever into the atmosphere. And I'm absolutely convinced that global warming is occurring, and only that it's happening very rapidly. The photos from outer space just show the ice retreating on Greenland. And you can see shores that you didn't see before. Let me point out to you that when there was 20,000 feet of ice in Canada, that's an enormous weight on that rock underneath it. The area of Canada was depressed by that weight. And now that the ice is gone, the continental glacial shield there is slowly coming back up. It's coming up faster in the northern part of Lake Michigan than the southern part. So Lake Michigan is slowly tilting. You follow me?
Okay.
People who have built houses in the 1930s at the southern tip of Lake Michigan, the wave erosion because of that tilt has moved Lake Michigan's shoreline a half a mile. They've lost their houses. In time, geologically, Lake Michigan is tilted enough that Lake Michigan is going to drain out the Mississippi River. But you've got to think geologically.
Yeah.
Okay? But this gives you some idea. All right? Next, anybody? Well, I thank you very much. Got a question.
For people who doubt and question global warming, is there a simple, clear website or source or something or other that one can refer them that could help be convincing, or is that an impossibility because it's a faith-based perspective or something?
Do you know of any place? I don't know of any place right now that's a clear source. Just put in global warming and see what you get.
2 million hits.
2 million hits.
I have a question.
Yes.
With global warming and the glacial belt, and then they talk about the rising sea levels and
right,
so forth.
Right.
With your knowledge then, I mean, how do you see that, say, in the next 100 years or at the rate it's going?
Yeah. At the rate it's going, I think we're in real trouble. The state of Florida, probably 2/3 of it, is no more than 25 feet high. There are areas that are 600 feet high above sea level. There are large parts of Florida that are going to be underwater.
Right.
And if you take all the ice that are on continents and melt them and get that water back into the ocean, then the sea level is going to rise about 25 or 30 feet. There's a lot of population of the world that are down at sea level.
And at the rate that it's melting,
you're going to see the effect of this very rapidly in the next 25 or 100 years anyway. I had a student in my class at University of Illinois, when I was teaching at California State University Northridge, whose grandfather used to fish from a dock in Norway. Okay? Norway is coming up out of the water, and that dock is now 4 miles inland because of the uplift. Okay? So it's no longer at sea level, but the ocean level of the oceans are now coming up faster than the uplift of Norway. Okay? But I don't know how fast it's going to affect us, but we're in trouble, is all I can say for you.
How much of Florida would have to be sunk in order to change the political?
Good question.
That would depend on whose president's brother lived.
I think with the oceans come up, do you imagine that the Great Lakes will come up as well?
No. Niagara Falls, through geologic time, is working headward. Eventually, it's going to drain the lakes behind it. But this is not going to affect the level of those lakes because there's no glaciers there that are melting off to speak of. What you're not aware of, probably, is the fact that in the ocean floor, there is what we call methane ice. As the snows melt off of the Canada and Alaska and it exposes the permafrost, there's going to be more and more methane released from the permafrost areas. But there's also methane released on the ocean floors from the decay of plants and animals, the carbonaceous material that gets transported out. That material rises underneath the sediments that there, hits the very cold water, and at depths of about 100 to 200 feet, the pressure there and the coldness makes what we call methane ice. Methane gets trapped in ice crystals. Okay? There is more methane trapped there in methane ice worldwide than exists in all of the oil and all of the coal on the Earth's surface. If we warm the oceans so that that methane ice melts, it will release all of this methane, and we're really going to have an accelerated global warming. Okay? So this is another concern that the average person doesn't realize, that there's this methane ice there that could release that methane.
And what do you see then as a scientist that you're going to talk about? Is there a way of stopping this, or is it going to continue because it's already on its course?
We are very definitely, we've got to do some things about less burning of coal, less burning of oil and whatever, and to try to slow this pace and get it under control as best we can. But we may have, we're in trouble.
And we may have passed that point.
We may have passed that point. I don't know that we're going to stop it.
Because what was probably 50 years ago or so that they started talking about this.
Right, and nobody would believe us, and particularly the governments.
Right, or do anything about it.
Or doing anything about it, getting people to get to have automobiles that burn less gas, et cetera, et cetera. Let's go to worship.
Thank you.
Thank you.